Welcome to Polycast, a Civilization podcast focused on game strategy. Canis Albinus,
Makalua,
the main team,
Mega Bears fan, with guest co-hosts,
70.
You broke the thing.
Yep, broken. Irreparably damaged.
Hello, welcome to Polycast episode 48. I am 7D, and I'm joined by Canis Albinus.
COVID can't keep me down.
Makalua?
I don't know, lack of sleep might keep you down sometime.
And Mega Bears fan.
Hello, everyone.
Well, that was boring.
Just because he's in West Coast time and he's thinking, wow, she's complaining about lack of sleep. Look how early I got up.
It's only 9 o'clock. You should be up by then.
9 o'clock on a Saturday.
Yeah, that's the part.
Anyway, we're trying something new. Let's talk about Civ spinoff games before we even get started with the show. Joke opinions, go.
Are they actually going to make the fighting game they teased at April Fool's?
I hope so. Civilization Extreme Diplomacy?
Yes, Extreme Diplomacy! How can somebody else? I don't know.
Well, there was good old George Washington's Uncle Slam, but...
I can't remember the names now.
It was like, if you go back and look at the image, it's like a postage stamp, so you can barely tell what everything said. But I kind of want a game where you are building an individual city, and I know they did that with Civ City Rome, but that was like 15 years ago, so...
I had completely forgotten that existed.
City builders have kind of come back because of Skylines, so, you know...
And historic city builders are, like, all the rage right now after Banished on Steam.
Mm, yeah, because there's, like, what, Songs of Six, Banished one. There's something similar to Banished.
Well, there's also...
On my wish list. There's Foundation, Settlement Survival. I just saw a new one called Land of the Vikings. And specifically, it's these survival city builders where, like, they have, like, the harsh winters and stuff like that where, you know, your people... Gotta, you know, be fed and kept warm and stuff like that, or else they all start dying. Those are all the rage on Steam right now.
Let's avoid Frostpunk with its child labor.
In-game or in real life?
Like, in-game, you can literally set the city to be only children work, which is great.
Wow. I mean, yes, they're surviving in a strange frozen climate, but wow.
Pretty bad. You're not supposed to do that, obviously, but... You can.
Yep. And there's sci-fi city builders. And then we even have prehistoric ones like Dawn of Man, the Paleolithic city builder.
We even have one that's entirely based on beavers.
Oh, yeah.
Like anthropomorphized beavers or like you're literally beavers like building dams and stuff?
You're literally beavers building a city.
Isn't that what Perfect Bidoof is?
Say again?
Perfect Bidoof. So Bidoof is a Pokemon that's usually useless. But the fan art, it depicts him as, like, the extremely muscular man, and it's all golden. But I'm imagining this, like, extremely muscular David statue-looking beaver building things running around the map. That's going to be glorious.
Well...
But it's a Civ spinoff, so he's also wearing, like, Roman Legion armor.
Oh, yes. Better.
It's a regular Civ game, but instead of it being Civ... Instead of it being humans, it's all beavers.
It's all beavers. And then somebody's going to make a mod and the scout is going to look like Justin Bieber.
No.
Hey, we can take the animal theming all over the place. We could do like Civ Beehive Simulator, Civ Ant Colony.
I think Sim Ant already exists.
Not Sim Ant, Civ Ant.
Hmm. So do you have like red ants different from like other kinds of ants? I guess. They have their own bonuses, I'm assuming.
You have to fight all the ant mimics.
Ah. Or for, like, a more of a serious idea, how about, like, Lord of the Rings or, like, Skyrim breezes?
How many you'd have the, quote, historic Tamriel map that you'd fight on?
Yeah, that would be great.
I'm just imagining, oh, we're gonna play Skyrim on a Civ map. So... here's Rome, and if you look over there and you turn up the render distance, you can see London, and there's Beijing on the other side of the mountain, if you can, you know, no clip through it. And then up on the very top, there's Denver, because America settled two cities somehow. Oh.
I was going to say, if we're going to do it as the Tamriel map, I'm going to take the Khajiit and take over everything and kick the Imperials back to Atmora.
They have, like, a special, like, a commercial hub because, you know, they have wares or whatever.
Exactly. Khajiit has many wares. Oh, man, don't get me started. I could probably sit here and riff off of an Elder Scrolls Civ thing. Ah.
And that's how Mackie became a modder.
Take it to the modding community, Mackie.
Surprised it hasn't happened already.
It probably has, and we just don't know about it.
So, kind of a Civ spinoff, but not quite really. We also have some news about Humankind, you know, that other game that's like Civ, but, you know, in this case actually exists. Apparently, they've announced a new expansion, which is due out, I don't know, is there a release date? I don't
Fall 2022.
There we go, yeah. Okay, so in the next few months, a new Humankind expansion. It is titled Together We Rule. And it looks like it's bringing in a lot of ideas that we have seen in Civilization, geared towards diplomacy and international cooperation. Looks like we've got like spies and diplomat units, some kind of new diplomatic like resource, I guess, that's probably similar to Civ's diplomatic favor, some kind of world congress, embassies, and the interesting things that I'm seeing in this the Civ Fanatics topic that was posted about it was the idea of third-party reinforcements, where apparently, if I'm understanding this correctly, you can temporarily give your units to another culture for them to use in joint warfare. So kind of similar to how in Civ you can buy the units from suzerain city-states, except in this case, it might actually be from other like full Civ cultures. So that could be a pretty neat ability that could make cooperative warfare much more worthwhile and viable compared to, you know, Civ, where it's like we declare a joint war and then I just have to hope maybe someday my AI ally will actually send some dang units to the front and do something.
I mean, I'll have to see it to believe it.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I would rather have some kind of like military like planning ability where like you can ping certain locations or units or cities and the AI will preferentially attack those, or like you can negotiate with them to, you know, attack or defend certain places, as opposed to just flat out taking control of their units. But I don't know, maybe the AI tech just isn't there for that sort of thing, or maybe that's a UI nightmare. I don't know, but you know, better than nothing, I guess. At least my allies' units will be at the front doing something, even if they are basically under my control.
And adding some new cultures, too. Switch into the Scots and do the whole Highlander that can be only one and take over the map.
And still lose.
Yeah, because points, apparently.
I'm sorry, Mr. Scotsman, you lost to the Singaporean, even though they have almost no land to grow their own food.
They built some stuff really early on and banked some points, and so, yep, you lose.
What are their special abilities?
Who knows?
It's not actually released.
No, they haven't told us what any of the abilities are. They haven't told us any of the actual details about any of this stuff.
If their promotional strategy is anything like what Firaxis has done with Civ, I wouldn't be surprised to see them, you know, gradually announce, you know, the individual cultures and show previews and stuff for them, you know, like maybe once every couple weeks. But it's a completely different studio, so who knows how they'll promote it. I mean, at least they're doing better than City Skylines, where they basically announce a new expansion pack like 2 weeks before it goes live on Steam.
Oh, I don't mind that.
Actually, no, because then you don't have that long extended period of hype, and then by the time it gets there, everybody's like, oh, you know?
Yeah, but on the other end of that same, you know, double-bladed sword, there is the, oh my gosh, I had so many other games that I was planning on playing. Why did you throw a wrench in everything? Because it's City Skylines, and every time a new expansion comes out, it's like, dang it, there's going to go another 100 hours of my time.
Okay, it's time to talk about the meat and potatoes of this episode. CivMD here has written a, 28-page guide to domination victory, which I've read probably 20 pages of it. It is quite a piece of work.
Yeah, somebody was talking about spending $100 on a game. So what did you think about it?
I did not realize that religion was as strong a thing to do as it seems to be, according to this.
Probably the most useful part of that guide is trying to explain how religion can support a domination game in most cases and so well, and why it's currently broken, and I love it. And there are no intentions for anything to be fixed in the game at this point.
I'm not sure I would even call it broken, because you can just as easily counter something like that if you know it's coming.
I mean, it does rely on work ethics, but the guide depends on, assumes that you're playing single player. And the devs have graciously granted us that the AIs really don't go for work ethics, which is clearly the best.
So we've got the general strategy part. I did not realize that units were as much more expensive in Civ 6 as they seem to be, but they seem to grow exponentially in cost.
I subconsciously knew it, because every time I would, actually try to build like a Renaissance or industrial unit, I'd be like, my God, this is expensive. But I never actually plotted out the cost compared to previous Civ games and actually looked at the numbers.
Yeah, so I started playing Civ when it was Civ 5, and I learned a lot from like Filthy Robot and people like that. And back in Civ 5, the general strategy was to go for 1 or 2 melee units plus a crossbow rush. Back then, as you know, the range units were a little bit overpowered, and they didn't get they had just as much effectiveness against city walls compared to units. And the strategy to get crossbows quickly, as soon as it hits, is to pre-build so many composite bowmen. And then you rush down with your crossbows. And you try to do the same thing, but it's even more effective because the later units actually require even more production. Because with the introduction of districts in Civ 6, the people are assuming that you are developing your city well. So they just went really up on the production costs, like as your eras just progress.
So part of it was also a conscious design philosophy to try to limit the number of units that are on the map, because one of the big complaints with Civ 5 was those carpets of doom and unit congestion. So there's several overlapping design philosophies in Civ 6 that were like, let's limit the number of units. One of them is their build cost. Another one is the addition of the corps and armies and that sort of thing.
Absolutely. But now you can just get past that and be just as effective, because you should be doing that like all the time. You should be pre-building your classical era units and carry it all the way over modern eras.
Yeah, one of the big things that's always considered like a detriment to certain civs that have unique units is if they cannot be upgraded into. I know that's always like a big hit to a civ or a leader on a lot of people's like tier charts and stuff like that. If you can't upgrade into their unit, they get like knocked down a tier.
Yep. But now, except for the Malone Riders of the Mapuche, pretty much everything can be upgraded. So France, in my opinion, for example, and England, in terms of domination, just went up in terms of viability so much more, because now you can upgrade your Musketmen to Red Goats, and that's a huge power spike. And also, for the Norwegians, the Berserkers now upgrade from Swordsmen, and going from a 36 power unit to a 55 unit at the cost of just 150 gold for that upgrade, it's a huge power spike. When I played Norway, especially on the land map, I would start attacking almost when I have the, almost I'm done with unlocking the Berserkers, and the Russian with the Swordsman, and pillage a few mines, get the money and the science at the same time, you hit the Berserkers, and then upgrade, and then roll everything down. That saves a lot of time, and the Norwegians are just so good right now, and everybody should actually try them. The Berserker unit especially has the 5 combat strength penalty when you're defending, except that you can nullify that by having a great general. So it's not even a penalty anymore, really. Everybody should play the Vikings.
Seems like that's an unpopular opinion right now.
Yeah, and let's see. And the other thing I wanted to, like, people don't build encampments for some reason, which bothers me a little bit. Especially even, like, these, even 5th YouTubers sometimes just skip building encampments. Great generals are very, very, very important. So, just like in any game, having your SD is great. Like, if you play Smash, if you can, for example, jump cancel, you can put in more moves. And speed is everything, really. Especially in domination, because if you rush in faster with your units, you can attack more times within the same number of turns, and also your enemy doesn't have time to actually build up a defense. And also, great generals are almost like a requirement if you want to use any siege units in a serious way. Because when you have the +1 movement, then you don't have to waste a turn setting it up. Because setting up takes two movements, right? So one movement, right? So you move in, set up immediately, and then you can attack. And that protects your siege units a lot, because your siege units can be pretty flimsy. City bombardments can absolutely destroy them pretty quickly. So if you move in and shoot, then you can deplete the walls quickly, so that the city bombardments is no longer a factor. So
the general movement bonus is particularly good just for ranged units in general, because you get to move onto rough terrain and then still have a movement point, or even half a movement point, left over to fire or attack.
Right. Absolutely. And I keep gushing over about the Berserkers, but the +1 movement, if you add it to the Berserkers already, pretty impressive, like a 4 movement. If you... So if it becomes 5 movements, what you can do is to move in, pillage, which takes 3 movement points, and then attack using the last movement point. So it's basically they don't die. They kind of don't die. So a lot of things that you can simply abuse by having increase movement speed. And that's especially holds true with Grand Columbia, which you have that as default. Like, I don't know what the devs were thinking when they designed Grand Columbia. I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, I was going to bring up Grand Columbia, because that's one of those things that you've got the Commandant that go along with everything else that are even better than the normal Great Generals, and they have the +1 movement, and then they have their special unit on top of that, and it's like you just run over things so fast. And even when the AI can take advantage of that.
I remember when they were first announced and we saw previews of their abilities, everyone was thinking, like, my goodness, any one of these abilities would be, like, a great ability for a domination-focused civ. And they get, like, all 3 or 4 of these things stacked on top of each other. Like, that's crazy. It's ridiculous.
Which is why when you see them as an opponent in the game, kill them now.
I mean, the thing is, like, you can also stack the Great General on top of the Commandante General. So... you're essentially moving around with +2 movement and +10 combat strength for the entirety of the game.
Is that still in the game? I thought that was patched out.
No, it's still there.
Oh, is it? Oh my goodness.
It trivializes the game.
It's a feature.
It's a feature. I don't know what people were thinking.
They were probably thinking, if people don't like this, they can turn it off.
How?
By removing the DLC from the list of things that are active in the mod manager thing in the main menu.
You turn off New Frontier Pass specifically?
You can turn off any individual DLC.
Okay, yeah, I wasn't sure. Yeah.
Yeah, they all show up as essentially as a mod in the game's what's it? What's the content?
It's like the content manager or the
Yeah, the addition of content. I don't really play with mods, so I would not know.
I only play with the mod that doubles the natural wonders because I hate ugly, bland worlds.
Ah, I see. So I'm assuming you like to preserve the nature instead of what I do with the Magnus chops.
I don't play for domination victory that much at all, actually.
I see. Yeah, so,
but I can recognize it as a legitimate strategy.
Yeah. Canis is a builder, not a destroyer.
Ah, well. So, yeah, I did. So I wasn't sure when to introduce myself, but so I during the day, I am a MD, and my name is Civ MD because I'm an MD who likes to play Civ. So how I like to think about it is I like try to save lives during the day and take them away at night. Like freaking Thanos. A soul for a soul.
Get home, log into the computer. Alright, time to do my snap for the day.
No, it helps me rushing down and just like letting your Empire to sprawl, just watching that is a great, really stress reliever. What were we talking about? Yeah, the
Magnus chops.
Yeah, that's the important part. That's important, but everybody knows about it. But Tour de Magnus is the most important thing. It's a little bit sad because ultimately, with the second expansion pack, they gave us so many choices in terms of what kind of like governors you can put in. But there's only really a few realistic choices. I mean, in most cases, Magnus is the right answer. So, which is a little bit sad. It would have been nicer if it's a little bit more balanced. But then again, what can you do?
What could you give another governor that would equal Magnus?
That's a good point. Do you like, for example, do we give Liang like gives like two more like charges for workers maybe? Because that would be like. So, like, mathematically speaking, let's say, you chop down, you give the ability to chop for more production by using a worker chop and with Magnus. And let's say then one worker, if it would normally provide 200 by chopping, you're actually providing, like, 300 now. So that's the 100-point difference with one worker.
It is worth pointing out, though, that Liang and Magnus do go very well together, because you can have one city with Liang pumping out those builders and then sending them over to the city with Magnus to do all that chopping with extra actions.
So you're saying that it'll just make Magnus stronger, basically?
Yeah, kind of. It's a
clue. Yeah, so, okay, then maybe find a different one. Like, find a different one. Maybe, like, give the, what's his face? The general guy? Maybe, like, a faster ability to produce units? Yeah, Victor. That's his name. Maybe give him a faster ability to produce units, maybe?
I mean, in Civ 6, production is king. I don't think there's much you can do to the other governors that would bring them up to Magnus's level, other than giving them production bonuses as well. I mean,
or nerf Magnus.
Or the other way around is you nerf Magnus somehow. I don't know. Maybe the amount of production that you gain scales up over the course of the game. So at the beginning of the game, it's not as strong. And then later in the game, it's a little bit stronger. So he's not like the obvious go to first governor.
I'm offended by nerfs.
I mean, it's always problematic when the only way to fix something is to hit something with a nerf bat.
Well, don't forget, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, yeah, at this point, it's unlikely anything is going to change. So,
right
conversation.
Yeah. However, yeah, that should be taken in mind, especially when you decide to make a conscious design choice in to increase production so much throughout the ages. The production costs so much throughout the ages that like you're absolutely completely dependent on the production, and every production of whatever you make has a snowball effect. So that should be taken into account in terms of Civ 7, maybe. I don't know. That's one of the things. But at this point, the magnet shop is king, and you chop out all of your units so that you can be ready to roll over your opponents. And a lot of the times when you go on to, like, not necessarily Fanatics, but like when you go on to Reddit, and when you look at some people asking about like when to settle and where to settle, this holds true for everything. I'm sure you know, but you need to think about what's the pros and cons of getting a new settler. Like whether it's a domination game or a culture game or whatever it is, if you're going to settle, you want to settle at a place that you're going to get even more production. It's all about the snowball, right? So if you get a settler, you want to settle near where you can get even more chops. And that's the conscious decision, because otherwise, in most cases, you're just getting more units are better. So oftentimes when you do these kinds of like domination games, you would only you only realistically need two or three settlers. And that's actually also like a new trap I see very often. You focus on like building your city or settling too much because you're told that you're supposed to settle a lot, and then you miss the timing to like get a ton of units. That's the other like important part in the general strategy when you're trying to do domination victory, but really any kind of victory, really.
Some victories require more cities, but yeah.
I mean, here's the thing, though. I mean, I understand people who like to build, but why build what you can take?
Oh, you definitely take. I do like to build, but I also do like to take when they get in my way.
Ah,
that's certainly Phil's philosophy.
Ah.
I'm not a pacifist.
Ah, I see. Then I agree with you.
I'm not a full-on dominationist, but a domination seeker. But
dominatrix.
No.
Sorry.
But I do, like, if there are AIs that are close to me that are being obnoxious, I will kill them.
So you're truly a great who actually built their empires and also was a good conqueror. I'm more of Ivan the Terrible.
Uh-oh, did we lose connection?
No, nobody was saying anything.
Ah, okay.
Awkward silence stepped in for a minute.
We haven't heard from them in years. Go ahead, whoever was going to talk.
Do you guys cut these kinds of stuff, like these moments out?
The only thing that I cut out is long silences and things like that, and I do it using the truncate audio function.
Uh-huh.
So anything you say will be heard.
That's a problem.
Uh-oh. Have you said something secret?
No, I didn't say anything secret. We'll see if I'm kosher or 100% of the time. You did warn that this is a
family friendly show. Yes.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. That's always a challenge with me.
It's a challenge for a lot of people.
Join the club.
Which club?
It's a challenge to stay family friendly club.
Ah. Yes.
Have to bite to do the tongue-in-cheek thing a number of times because, oh, there's so many things I want to say, but it's a family-friendly show.
So, what else? I mean, I don't know if anybody actually went through the specific strategies that I wrote.
I made it down to Montezuma.
Yeah.
So I read a lot of them.
Yeah. But, Montezuma, so there's a couple, I would say there's a couple civilizations that don't really like that are singular in terms of their strategy. Obviously, Basil is very very different from everybody else, but the Montezuma is also very different because you're really farming you're really trying to farm as many workers as possible, right? So I think that's one of the things that I also see when you try to play Montezuma, you want to get them to come to you, really. So if you go out and try to attack somebody, and then you get a worker, then you have to bring that worker, right? The better way to do it is you just declare war on them, or if they have some unit next to you, whether it's a city state or a neighboring civ, you just attack them. So the new worker doesn't have to travel all the way back. And then when you aggro them, they will start sending in their waves of, you know, tributes, really. And the plan for Montezuma really deviates a lot from the everybody else. Where, like, everybody else, the game plan is usually, okay, where's the horses? Okay, where's the iron? Okay, I developed them. I got my breed general. Let's chop out some swordsmen and the horsemen and the siege units, and then let's roll over. But there's a couple ones that completely deviated, and I personally love how Montezuma plays.
I think you had mentioned before that religion and work ethic is very powerful for domination, but I don't think you went into much detail explaining how all that works. Is that something you want to maybe elaborate on a little more?
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's the that's the other thing. So I've seen a lot of there's some YouTube videos about how to pull this off, but there's some of the some things that people don't do it optimally. So I think this might be a good chance to go over it. But again, as you said, the production is king, right? So you want to use Worthex to your best ability. So you're trying to get a good adjacency bonus and try to hit theology as soon as possible to double that, and production goes into every city. At the same time, in order to further augment that, instead of wasting your time actually building, like making builders, if you hit the monumentality bonus, you can just fate purchase builders. So this is a really, like, it almost basically doubles your production, because your faith itself becomes, so your faith income, the amount of faith you're actually getting that stockpiles into your faith, bank, that becomes your workers. Whereas the adjacency bonus itself is also directly production. So that goes into units. So you're basically just getting free workers without the cost of anything, while you maintain the ability just to pump out whatever units you want. So that's why if you pull this off correctly, this is just so good. Even with civilizations like Mali, if you do the work ethic strategy, the penalty to production actually doesn't even matter anymore. It's really that good. I think I wrote this in gory detail here. So it's actually the general strategy part two part here. But it's most important to get the religion first in order to even make this work. So that the people, so you can't play Basil if you didn't get the religion, right? And if you, for Peter or whatever else, and Giedi, as you know, are going to rush towards like trying to get their religion as much as possible so that you can't have any fun. So oftentimes it's almost necessary to get run a few Holy Site projects so that you can recruit that great prophet. I'm not sure if you have any, if anybody has any problem with that, but I often see people don't doing that. As long as you can defend yourself, just going for one or two Holy Site projects is actually beneficial. Because the earlier you get your religion and secure work ethics, the faster production spike you will have. And if you have that bonus, let's say 6 to 8 production in the early game, you can pump out your settlers even faster. So, and then that's where the entire chain starts.
And then get theology and win.
Basically. And then, the other thing is, you need to get the monumentality bonus, right? So it's really, the one end is to getting a religion and securing work ethics, and the other end is to get monumentality. And the easiest way to do it is that the medieval era Golden Age is the most, I would say, reliable. Because you can, so the Exodus of the Evangelist dedication is probably the easiest one to use. Because honestly, that's also a little bit rather unbalanced, I would say, the dedications that you get. Because everything else you need to build, let's say, in order to get a Golden Age point, you need to build a library. So if you want to build a library, that means that you have to build a campus and then a library. Whereas, that's only one city. And you can only do that for your own city. So you need to have cities in the first place. Whereas Exodus and the Evangelists give you 2 Golden Era points, and then as long as you have 1 missionary, you can probably convert 2 or 3 cities. And then it's not limited to your own cities. You can spread it to city states or the other people's cities. So it's so much easier to get a Golden Age from Exodus and Evangelists and compared to any other dedication. And so medieval era is the much more reliable in terms of getting a Golden Age rather than a Classical Age, because when the Classical Age hits, you choose the dedication and then you pump out missionaries, you convert everybody, and then you get the monumentality. And then you get the Golden Age in the medieval era, you choose monumentality, faith purchase even more workers, and then you chop down all of your armies, and then upgrade all of them, and then roll over, and you win.
But I thought you were supposed to build the classical era units, but you have to wait until the medieval era to do that?
No, you can do it as you're going.
Ah,
but
okay.
The thing is, and then you deliberately hold off on unlocking your medieval era unit. You see what I mean?
Yes.
So when you have a lot of workers, and so you deliberately hold off from actually getting the men at arms, you have 1 turn left until the men at arms, and you just chop out all of your swordsmen and then upgrade all at the same time.
Yeah, strategic ignorance is what I like to call that.
Yes, I love how you phrase that.
This stick is too sharp. All our scientists keep cutting themselves on it. We need to put this research on hold.
Same goes for the catapult and the if you like heavy cavalry, getting a few heavy chariots can work as well. Well, speaking of that, I want to give a tangent. Is that I have a little gripes about how. In currently how useless kind of like getting heavy cavalry is at the moment, because in your general army makeup, you're going to like the melee units right now are going to be your main workhorses, because they're the only ones after Gathering Stone who can actually take down cities with the help of siege units. And the light cavalry are like generally faster, so you can pillage things much better. And then rage units kill units, and siege units take care of the city defenses. But I'm really not sure where heavy cavalry fits in any of these, unless you have a really good replacement, like maybe the Tapma for Basil, but there's really no role for it. And I also have gripes about it, but I don't know what that will, how one will actually be able to fix it.
I usually use my heavy cavalry as defensive units. I'll station them in my, you know, cities, and if any barbarians or enemy units wander into my territory, then, you know, I use the relatively high combat strength and fast movement of the heavy cavalry to surround them and destroy them before they do any damage.
Right. And they do have really good combat strength. they do have good combat strength.
Use them as screens. You know, kill the enemy units first.
Yep.
And they are also good just in general on the offensive for, you know, using that extra movement bonus to surround and flank enemy units so that you get that the support bonuses. Even if you end up not attacking with them and you end up attacking with your melee units anyway, you get like that plus two, you know, combat strength or whatever from each adjacent friendly unit. And that would include those heavy cavalry units, which I think ignore zone of control, right? So, so yes, they're very easy to get in behind or around enemy units for support bonuses.
But at the same time, you can, by using light cavalry, you can compress the rolls of the pillager and the flanker. And also, the other issue is that there's no in-between unit between the heavy chariot and knights. And knights, the power spike really comes when you go from swordsmen to men-at-arms. And there's nothing that would really, like, go along with it. You're not going to use your heavy chariots during that time. They only have 3 movement points. They suck at that point, so.
Well, they make nice statues on the borders.
Sure.
It was all I could come up with.
Nicer cool. Yes, nicer cool. And they need to be cooler. I mean, that it's a, you know, I mean, nothing about Civ is about, like, any realism, right? But, like, knights completely revolutionize how society works, right? It's how, like, it's the centerpiece of feudalism. And the fact that you hardly ever use knights, and you should have a lot more knights and like just rolling around, but like you never really have a reason to like use a lot of them. It's a little bit it'll feel nicer maybe. Practically, it doesn't make a difference, probably not. Especially when you got your great general, if you're playing Grand Columbia and running around with five movement point melee units.
Okay, so do we want to go over the notable civilizations? We already talked about Montezuma. I see the longest one here is... Oh, wait, that's a poem. Why did you write a poem for Catherine the Black Queen?
In terms of writing so much prose. And I mean, look, it's France, right? And I like Les Mis.
Well, it's definitely not bad.
Yeah, I tried. It's I tried, and it actually makes sense. But you can see that this is the new lyrics for the song, right? Do you hear the people sing?
Yes.
So
we already talked about you liked Norway, you liked Montezuma. Were there any other civs in particular that you enjoy using for your domination strategies and that you recommend other people try out, especially if they're maybe underutilized ones?
I mean, Hammurabi is not underutilized, but people like it is like, and then people are often confused in terms of how to use them, in terms of how to make an army around it. But I actually like this part about like how I broke it down, I would say, because it all depends on what initial resource you have. So it depends on if you have iron, stone, or neither. And I think it might be helpful, like if you look at that to come up with your initial strategy. Because at turn zero, if you see stones, then you already know that you're going to build a quarry and you'll be able to chop out a wall right away. So, and then that...
Can you say that again, please?
Yeah, you kind of trailed off there a bit.
Okay.
You chop a wall, and then you'll be able to get what?
Catapults.
There we go.
Yeah, and then you get catapults, and then you need the 2 crossbowmen to... and then if you get 2 crossbowmen, you can unlock bombards. And if you build an aqueduct, that will unlock nitre at the same time. So that's how you get bombards. So in order to get fast bombards, you need a quarry. So you can make the association between, okay, I have a stone, so I'm going to probably use bombard.
And when we say fast bombards, I mean, we mean, like, really fast. Like, we're talking, like, classical era bombards here, which is crazy strong.
Yeah?
But, yes, it is.
comical.
The only problem is that your classical era generals are not going to boost their speed, so your bomb bursts will be probably pretty slow.
Yeah, the biggest hang-up for Hammurabi and Babylon is you run the severe risk of out-teching your production ability to actually produce these advanced units. Because once you unlock the advanced unit, you can't build the older obsolete units unless you actually lack a resource that's required for building the more advanced unit. So if you have the resources to build a bombard, the game won't let you build a catapult. And a bombard's going to be... Gosh, I mean, how much more expensive is it? Probably 3, 4, 5 times as expensive.
Right. It's incredible.
In the early game, before you potentially even have industrial hubs unlocked, that's like a lot of, that's like a probably as much or more production than you might spend on a contemporary wonder.
Yeah, absolutely. And you also need gold. So Hammurabi like needs a lot of gold in order to pull anything off. So actually write it down for like our people in the Hammurabi chapter exactly how much gold you need. So in order to get one bombard, you need to upgrade, like you need to get 2 crossbowmen, right? So you'll upgrade them from archers. You're not building them from scratch. So that's if you get 2 crossbowmen, that's 500 gold. And then in order to upgrade a catapult into a bombard, that takes 330 gold. So you need you need at least 830 gold to have one bombard and another 330 per every bombard. So when you're building your classical era units, you already know you can actually calculate how much gold you're going to need at the end and then try to get that much gold as like at any way possible.
Pillage, pillage, like, pillage.
Or you can you'll have to sell your luxuries because you don't want to you're probably not attacking yet unless you have that advanced unit, right? So, but obviously pillage, yeah.
Take and, all the sheep from the enemy cows or the enemy pens.
Right. But I would say my favorite strategy is pike and shots, though. The pike and shots are probably. So Hammurabi is probably the only civ that actually non-ironically uses pike and shots well, because they don't require any resources, and you can get them without actually needing there's nothing alongside the tech tree to get to pike and shots as Hammurabi that actually requires any resources. So you don't have iron, you don't have any stones, let's say, but as long as you have archers and spearmen. And then, so you kill a unit with a spearman to unlock the pikeman. And then you get 2 crossbowmen to unlock pike and shot with unlocks together with bombards, right? Then your spearman can go directly into pike and shots. It takes a lot of money, but this is the fastest. So pike and shots and 2 crossbows, it can be comically strong, especially when you pull it off at turn 80.
Gotta love sticking a stick in somebody's chest and then blowing the rest of it open. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
Is that what a pike and shot actually does? I have no idea.
Pike and shots are actually, they are dual units. So half of the army are pikemen and the half of the army are like a musket. So they like a switch between. Basically, when your muskets are recharging, the pikemen stays in front to like protect them. And then when they're ready to shoot, the pikemen, crouches down so that the musket men at the back can shoot. That's
basically
what
the prototype for line infantry, except instead of the front line just having more muskets, they had spears.
Yeah.
Sort of like the Spanish tertio or the German Lanzknecht.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. I missed having the tertio in Civ 5. They're not great, but at least it made me actually feel like I'm actually playing the Spanish. But you can do that with Hammurabi, anyways. More Spanish than the Spanish themselves. The other one that I think it's very underutilized is either Dido or Poundmaker. That's underutilized in terms of offensive purposes. Because people, especially for Pound Maker, people like sleep on how much money you can possibly save with them. Like, if you use your trade routes well, then you are just getting free tiles, and then you have two, what do you call it? You have two trade routes, right? So you can get the double money. So that saves a lot of money, and then the tiles that you get are basically equivalent to chops. So you have more money and you have more units. That's nice. And I think people should use Pound Maker more. Very underappreciated.
I use Pound Maker, but not for domination.
He's one of my favorite leaders in the game.
Yes, but you should be using every Civ for domination.
I don't think I've played a domination victory in since before Gathering Storm.
I see. So you will just, like, if somebody's in your way, you will crush them, but you won't, like, actually defeat all of them.
No, it's usually too much work to go and, oh, they're all on the other continent, and they're all a bunch of really weak enemies. I'm just going to stay here and go to space.
Uh-huh. That makes sense.
That surely is faster.
Yeah, time-wise, yeah, it's probably faster. It's just, like, I guess it's different personalities. I just don't like clicking next turn all the time. Oh, I just want to. Mm-hmm.
I don't have to do that. I have plenty of stuff to do in my own empire, but.
I see. Yeah. But you don't want to see all of the entire map turning into one same color?
Not in Civ. Other games, maybe, but not in Civ.
Okay.
I don't play Civ, like, to be optimal. I don't play Civ even to be good at it. I mostly just play Civ because it's relaxing and it's an environment I like.
I see.
Like, I don't even play at high levels. I mostly just play, like, mentally I'm weaker than I used to be because of a disease, and I can't think as hard as I used to, so I just like to relax when I play Civ.
See. Well, nothing's, let me tell you, though, nothing's more relaxing than the watching the other cities change colors. I'm just being contrarian. I'm just kidding.
It's okay.
Sometimes I go in there to conquer things, but sometimes I'm trying to play a more relaxed game like a science or a cultural, then somebody does something and I'm like, oh no, you didn't. You're turning into my color now. That's it.
Yeah, I mean, why build wonders or districts or anything when you can just, you know, take them?
Well, the big reason is that the AI often puts them in stupid places, and I don't like where the AI put them.
cities or wonders.
Yeah, that's one of the big things that often stops me from going on the domination path as opposed to the building my own dang cities path, is I just don't like where the AI puts things.
You can also burn their cities to the ground.
That's true, but if there was a wonder in that city, then bye-bye.
I mean, a wonder that is not built in the image of me to glorify me is useless.
Oh, dear.
I'm just playing the... you know, like, I write this there, but like when you play as Genghis Khan, you have to have the mindset of Genghis Khan.
Oh yeah, I saw that in there about in terms of pillaging, because I forget that a lot of the time. I'm thinking more in terms of, I'm going to take this city in a couple turns anyway. I don't want to have to spend all this time in, you know, however many turns, even though it's only one turn per tile, but, you know, have a swarm of builders to rebuild everything. Like, unless they're unhealthy, maybe I'll pillage then, but I know I should be. And for this, yeah. A better way to slow down the AI sometimes is just to run through and pillage all the crap.
Pillage is so good, actually. So you see these posts about Civ fanatics where you win, like, you know, turn 90 science victories. And, like, how they do it is just, you know, take over, give one of your cities that has, all, like, so many mines to the enemy. And then you attack it, pillage all the mines, make peace. And then... you take that city, you fix all of the mines, and then give it to the enemy again, and then attack again, and then, like, pillage those mines again. That's how, yeah, that's, pillaging is so good. Guys, like, you should consider pillaging your own mines from, in your other games.
And if memory serves, when the Civ 6 first came out, you could actually repair enemy improvements with your builders.
See, I did it more back then.
Yeah, imagine if you could still do that. You wouldn't even have to bother with capturing the silly city. You just pillage it, repair it, pillage it again, and launch your rocket ship in 1000 BC.
Yeah, exactly. Why do anything when you can pillage? Yeah, you know, like my categories. You know, why do anything when you can just like leech off from like free food and then just destroy everything in its path, right?
You just titled the episode.
What's the title?
Why do anything when you can pillage?
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's perfect. Why do anything when you can pillage? And I think that's pretty much sums it up. I agree. Just pillage and be a genocidal egomaniac autocrat.
I thought it was to be a crusader.
That depends. I mean, as you know, like it can be sometimes crusades are just an excuse for the autocrat.
Yeah.
Sometimes it is.
Look at
the third one. We don't talk about the third one.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Was it the fourth one? Sorry, it's the fourth one. It is the cruel irony where like Basil is the most like the greatest user of the crusader strategy when Constantinople was sacked during the Fourth Crusade.
Bad form, Dondolo.
Yeah, very bad form. But you should consider destroying cities more. That's the message.
Okay, I think it's time for Mackie.
Well, this has been episode 408 of Polycast. I'm Makalu, and with me today, Candace Albinus.
I made it. It's good. I'm going to go collapse in about 5 to 20 minutes.
Mega Bears fan.
And I have to run off to start setting up the house for my little boy's first birthday party. Can't believe it's already a year.
Congratulations.
Yes, well, congratulations to him for surviving for a year. Well done.
It's easier now than it used to be, yes.
For sure.
And our guest co-host today, SivMD.
Hey. Pillage more.
That is the takeaway from today, is pillage more. You're not pillaging enough.
Yeah.
And absolutely check out his guide. It's posted on Civ Fanatics. And do not let its 28-page length deter you, because like the last 20 or so of those pages is Civ-specific stuff. So it's really like 6 pages of general advice, and then 20 pages of Civ-specific advice.
It's also written fairly well, so, you know, it's not a very dry writing.
Yeah, I mean, you have to, like, you just have to get to the poem part, like the Black Queen Catherine poem part.
Yeah, I liked that part.
Also, real quick, I don't know if this will make it into the actual episode or not, but we did get a comment on the live stream from John Wiarda, saying, you guys make workdays so much better. Polycast for the win. Thumbs up. So you're welcome, John Wiarda. And I hope you're enjoying the fact that we're actually getting our back catalog up onto the website now so that you actually can listen to it during work instead of just the live streams.
It is no longer a back catalog. It is, in fact, all on the website now, except for this episode. Yesterday we put up the last back episode.
Awesome. So plenty for you and all our other listeners to listen to if you can't make it on the Saturday mornings or Saturday early afternoons, depending on your time zone.
If you've never tried to edit an hour-long episode of audio while doubled over from nausea due to COVID, let me tell you, it's quite a lot of fun.
Massive air quotes around fun.
Yes.
Well, your dedication is
like Dwarf Fortress.
Your work and dedication, Candace, is appreciated by our audience.
Yeah. I hope so.
At least I appreciate it.
Thank you. Civilization 3, 4, 5, Beyond Earth, and 6 Sound Clips. Copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright The Polycast at thepolycast.net.